This episode of Discussing Who was recorded in early 2023 and may contain segments speculating on the Doctor Who 60th anniversary. As always, we hope you enjoy the show.
I want another adventure. Monsters, things blowing up.
Be careful what you wish for.
We are fighting an unknown homicidal force underwater in a nuclear reactor.
They can walk through walls. They only come out at night.
They're ghosts.
Every time I think it's going to get more extraordinary, it surprises me. It's impossible. I hate it. Oh, it's astonishing. I want to kiss it to death.
Who the hell are you?
The Doctor.
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this episode by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
I'm very well indeed, very well. People who are watching this on video can see that I'm wearing the nerd jacket of Rassilon.
Yes, indeed.
Here we are.
So let me guess, that jacket is going back to the future
Great
in
Scott
ways is. That no one has gone before.
Exactly. I've got Star Trek represented, and Kyle
Babylon
knows this one.
5.
Yeah, yep. And lots more. So it's everywhere.
We need to get you an Oz9 patch. Oh, how cool.
Nicely done, sir.
Very nicely done. Kudos. Kudos. And it wouldn't be Discussing Who if I could not say welcome back, Clarence Brown. Mr. Brown, how are you?
I'm doing great. And as I always say, glad to be on with you guys talking about some Doctor Who. So I'm doing good, man. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, as always, glad to have you here. So I don't have any news, but I would say if we have someone who is watching us for the very first time or listening to us for the very first time, Lee, what do you like sharing with people?
We all always like to say thank you, you know, welcome and thank you, because we know you got other things you could be doing, but you've chosen to spend this time with us. So we are grateful, and we'll try not to disappoint.
Indeed, indeed. And Clarence, if we have someone who is listening for the very first time and would like to subscribe or to connect with us, what would you tell them?
Well, first, I would say thanks for listening and watching. And also, as we do these lives, you should definitely look us up and follow us on all of our platforms, which we can be found at Discussing Who on all of those. And you can email us at discussingwho@gmail.com.
Awesome. Awesome. So, gentlemen, do you have anything else before we get started that you would like to bring up, since I don't have any news?
Nope.
Cool.
Ready for more Who?
One good thing about doing this in audio, I am agreeing with you, I am ready for more Who, is I don't have to wait for the uncomfortable silence. I can actually see you shake your head. No.
See us.
You can see us be uncomfortable now.
Yes, right. Indeed. Yeah. That adds a certain dimension.
All right. So I guess that means it's time for me to say, for everyone listening, if you have not seen Under the Lake, put us on pause. Go out. Watch the episode. Come back. Because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Affirmative.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky, too.
Alrighty, we are back to review Under the Lake. The spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back. Under the Lake was the third episode of the 2015 series of Doctor Who, first airing on the 3rd of October, 2015. It starred Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor and Jenna Coleman as Clara Oswald. This is part one of a two-part story. So, some review. Clarence Brown, that smirk, I have to say, I want to start with you. Some review. What say you?
I think you said it best. It's part one of a two-part story. With that said, I think we start to play with some of the time elements I love about Doctor Who at the end. And just that cliffhanger was amazing. And overall, I think I enjoyed it. We get to see Clara luring or going toward being Dr. Light again, or more like the doctor once again in this episode. And I like the concept of just ghosts and seeing the doctor trying to rationalize that in this episode. I don't remember anything about the second episode, so I have no idea where this is going. But I think overall, I think it was okay.
All right. Lee, what say you?
Yeah, as you and I were just discussing a few minutes ago, I don't remember this episode at all. I clearly haven't seen it since 2015, right?
2015, yes.
So 8 years later, I'm looking at it again and saying, holy smoke, this is kind of amazing. And I'm Clarence. That's an amazing cliffhanger, and I can't wait to find out what happens. I don't remember.
Doctor's
dead. Either. It's the end of the series.
So I was saying to myself earlier that I had watched this twice. This is actually my third time watching it. I remember we did a live listen on the Cultum Collective that I watched it. And then for Podshot, those are the only two times I have watched this. So this is literally the third time. And I have no memory of episode 3. That said, I'm not saying that I didn't like it. I like some of the themes and we're going to get into it, but did it blow me away? No, it didn't blow me away. But I think it did pose some interesting questions that we're going to get into. But first, Lee, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. You have often referred to a base under siege story, and that's something that is a trope of Doctor Who and probably a lot of sci-fi stories. My question to you, base under siege, just tell us what that is. And this is a redundant question probably for even asking it, but is this a base under siege story?
Absolutely, yes.
All right.
I wonder who actually coined that phrase, because I've only heard it in reference to Doctor Who, but I'm sure you're right. There are probably other franchises just because there are so many Doctor Who stories, you know, starting from 1963, the show did tend to fall into patterns. And some of them were, we've got a bunch of people in one particular place and they can't easily get out, and there's something on the outside. Mm-hmm. Or worse, there's something on the inside. And yeah, so yeah, Doctor Who will do the base under siege thing again and again and again. And sometimes it's a challenge to mix it up, you know, to make it different from all the others.
I think the last time we saw this was Waters of Mars.
Yeah. And that's one of the ones I was thinking of, because I think one of the features of Base Under Siege is doors that close and then somebody's on the wrong side of them. You know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, it's hard to avoid repeating. And in the modern era, at least, I mean, think of how many horror movies and sci-fi movies you've seen this. The long corridor where the lights go off from a distance, and so the darkness actually approaches the camera. You know, how many times have you seen that? But it's always good.
It is. Yeah.
So, Clarence, did this work for you? Do you like Base Under Siege?
I think sometimes it's good to make things seemingly simpler and put it all in one place, and let's explore that location, which I think that's what we get a bit in this episode. So I'm fine with it as long as the writing is good. And I think some of the tension we had from it being a base under siege episode made it work for me. I think it worked for me in this one.
Okay. You know, I liked yes, it was a base under siege, but it didn't feel so much like we've got to get out of there, because ultimately they stayed. You know, there it wasn't about we've got to escape. It was more so we've got to stay away from, you know, the ghost that we'll talk about in just a minute.
And they chose to stay. They chose to stay. Yes. And even at the end, when they had another chance to leave, the doctor plays to their morality or their goodness in their heart to say, come on, you're here for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it, that there's a moment where they had to choose whether or not to go, would they have the opportunity. I think that is kind of unique, isn't it? That's don't get that either way.
And, you know, I think that was what was a little bit unique about this story in itself. Yes, we, you know, assuming that there is a big bad that's coming in the next episode, but we, at this point, don't know really what the big bad is. Am I right? Are you guys feeling the same thing?
Huh.
Do we know?
Do we feel like we need more than what we have already?
So what do you think the big bad is? Or is there a big bad? Or what is the dilemma that they have? So describe their dilemma.
The doctor's dead. I think that's a problem.
Mm.
Mm. And it means that Claire is the doctor again by default.
Yeah. And also we have the body, which they did not open in the stasis chamber.
That's true.
Who knows what's in there? So I think that's going to be pretty important.
That's right. And if it turns out to be the master, we're all going to throw things at the screen. Right?
Please.
Or Davros. That would be as long as it's not the master or Davros.
I could give.
All I will say is, you know, who knows? You may lock the master away in a vault. I never know. Maybe, you know, in a tomb. I don't know.
You should throw away the key.
Throw away the key.
But speaking of keys, let's talk a little bit about the ghost. And the reason I said keys, they could pick up a key, but they couldn't take it to the wall. What do you think about using ghost in a sci-fi story? And Clarence, I'm going to ask you this question first. Do ghosts in sci-fi work?
I think that's what made them interesting in this episode. Of course, the doctor is going to look at every logical point when looking at the situation, and he's not going to believe in the superstition first off. That's not going to be the first thing he goes to. He's going to look for every logical bit of evidence to prove this is not a ghost. And he even admonishes one of the other crew members for saying it's a ghost at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And his big revelation, it's a ghost.
Yeah.
So I think the way it's played in this episode is really well done. And of course, we're going to get to the point till we get a little more information about what it really is. But I think it works for me. I think the special effects for the ghosts in particular were really well done in this episode. And they really didn't get scary to me until what you just mentioned, when they started picking up things. That's when I'm like, whoa, now. That's really creepy.
Kaylee, what do you say? Do ghosts work, and how do you like it the way it was portrayed here?
Well, I've mentioned many times that I had an argument with a fellow Whovian many, many years ago, before there was New Who, and an argument that I lost because I realized she's right, that the supernatural, including God, heaven, an afterlife, you know, does not exist in Doctor Who. And that's why it's so astonishing when the 10th Doctor encounters the devil. You know, it's like, this cannot be happening, you know? So this is another one of these things that, well, it's not ghosts. Okay. So everybody stop saying that. And then the doctor kind of gets cornered into saying, you know what? These are ghosts. And he's still got room to back out of that. Cause I just don't think, not in this show. This show does not have room for ghosts. We visited that idea many times, you know. Ghosts are going to turn out to be Cybermen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or ghosts are going to turn out to be aliens who live in the gas pipes in Victorian London. But yeah, everybody else thinks they're ghosts, but it's going to be something else. I love the rule teaching in this. You talked about the effect of seeing them go through the walls and that they can't carry things through the walls with them. Yeah. Notice how the storytelling here teaches us what the rules are. You know, we see them do it. And we go, okay, so that's how that works. And they can't do it in the Faraday cage. Okay. But they can go through this watertight door. Okay. Mm. But they can't take, you know,
a
knife with them. All right. Okay. This, you know, and they stick to the rules.
So this is a question for both of you and for anyone listening who does not know what this is. And I can't remember what this is. So this is for me and for anyone listening who does not know. The question is, what is a Faraday cage?
Well, from my understanding, it's a, well, for me, I'm thinking of more of a technology sense. It's a place you can take a device where it doesn't receive any signals. And, you know, in the technology sense, that's what I know it to be. A place that's cut off from all outside radio wave interference. It's sealed off.
Okay.
Yep. And it is a real thing. And that's and I don't know if Faraday was the one who developed it or if we call it that in his honor, but yeah, somebody figured out that if you build a structure and it's got an electric current going through it, then that scrambles anything else trying to go in or out.
Okay.
So very, very handy in some cases.
So
it's not crazy that they would have one in this undersea base. You
know? And it's not crazy that they mentioned that, because piggybacking off of what we just said, we learn later in the episode that the ghosts are chanting the same thing over and over. And we go so far as to realize that this is a signal that someone, thing, or what is transmitting. So I do like the tying in of referencing something that Clarence and Lee just said that is blocking everything, but yet they're doing something, killing people, turning them into dead transmitters, basically, ghosty transmitters. Which
they're trying to amplify the signal.
Yeah. Which is still weird, but
yeah. But a good explanation, yeah. I would be very disappointed if they were just killing them because they're nasty and they, you know, and bad tempered, you know. There's actually a reason why they're doing this.
Yeah, a good explanation. But for me, at the same time, when we start to discover or hear, or we know the words, thank goodness we had somebody that was deaf and that was deaf and that could read lips,
right,
to kind of figure out what's going on. But that's the explanation kind of lost me, or coming to that conclusion kind of lost me with the sword and the different few words that they chanted. I can't remember what the words were, but it kind of lost me how they came to that conclusion. But once we got the conclusion, I'm fine with it, knowing what these ghosts are.
You know, you brought up something, Clarence, and this is something that I actually really enjoyed about the episode, was the fact that they did have a character who was deaf. And on top of that, the actor who was portraying Cass was also deaf. And they even tied in the use of someone who is hearing impaired or completely, you know, deaf, having the ability or learning the ability to read lips. And I really, from my own person reading lips and, you know, not fluently reading lips, but being able to make out stuff pretty well with reading lips, I loved that part.
Yeah.
And I loved the nod and the realism that they had there. I really, 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 you know, like that. Thoughts about having the deaf character in general?
I'm with you. It's so positive to have somebody with something that's seen as a deficit actually be the one with the superpower. She's the only one there, including the doctor, who can figure out what the ghosts are saying. And that's brilliant. Is it a plot convenience that there happens to be somebody who can read lips on this base so that can happen? Yeah, that's a little, you know, well, lucky that happened. But, you know, still, it's just great to see. And I didn't know that the actor was deaf. So that's a,
according to Memory Alpha, she was.
Yeah. And not the first time that Doctor Who has had a profoundly deaf actor, as far back as what is it called, Destiny of the Daleks.
Mm.
And so I've always appreciated the show for doing things like that. But yeah.
So let me ask you guys a question. If I were to ask you what were some of the themes that they played with in this episode, what immediately pops into your mind? Any themes that they were working at.
Good question. Yeah,
it's a good question. And I think it's not because there aren't any, but maybe because there are an embarrassment of riches. It's hard to pick one. I think the functions of a base under siege story is that you always get this sense of the family, you know, these people who are not related by blood, but they have become a family. Mm-hmm. And I always think that's interesting. And then they'll tend to act like one when they're under stress. You know, the doctor's delighted about this ghost, and nobody else is sharing his enthusiasm. And they finally, one of them just says, he was our friend.
Yeah.
Oh.
Very good.
Well, that too, but yeah. So there's the family that's made of these people who didn't know each other before. There's always that. The doctor gets put in the corner saying, we now have the opportunity to learn what happens to you after you die. Isn't everybody excited about that? Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And really nobody else wants to.
Yeah. Well, the consequences could be dire.
Exactly. I think they're like, yeah, can we have this conversation upstairs or something? Can we get out of this first? And then, yeah. So there's a lot of the doctor being kind of spectrum-y in this episode, isn't it? I mean, we'll get to my favorite scene here in a minute, but there's a lot of Clara having to kind of nudge him to act like a normal person.
Oh, the flashcards.
Yes.
All right. So it's
just sort of the old doctor things of, you know, of telling people to their face to shut up because they're stupid, you know, dude.
But what I liked about it is, and Clarence, you picked up on one of the themes that I wanted to bring up, which was throughout this entire story, there is so much in with communication between Clara and the doctor as their, you know, companion doctor relationship progresses. Mm-hmm. Communication with trying to understand why is the TARDIS against being here. Communication between doctor and trying to figure out what these writings on the wall are that can't be, you know, aren't translated. All of that, and reading the messages and whatnot. But the flashcards were just awesome to me.
Yeah.
Just freaking awesome. So speaking...
For the record, it is the dark, the sword, the forsaken, the temple.
Yes.
And I went back and watched the beginning of the episode again, just before we got on. And I sort of had a sense about this watching it before, but I really appreciate that every time one of the people who work on the base comes into visual contact with the markings on the wall, we get an immense close up of their eye with those letters, those symbols illuminated in the pupil of their eye.
Yeah.
So visually, we're being told some kind of communication has been made, but we haven't been told what the consequence of that is.
Interesting, and that when they quote unquote die, they're eyeless.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the eye thing is connected even after they become quote ghosts.
Mm.
I'm keeping them in quotes.
So did anyone catch where the people on this base worked?
They're in Scotland.
Yes, but not.
They're off in.
Where? What agency did they work for?
It's called the MOD.
See, I thought they worked for UNIT. Did I hear that wrong?
No, they read the psychic paper saying the doctors are UNIT.
Yeah.
Ah. They did. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a petroleum company. At least Pritchard is there representing the petroleum company.
Yeah, that's another aspect I really liked about the episode, where you had, I guess, Pritchard being the kind of the greedy guy in the group. He's about the bottom line, and you had a few other people from different companies, I guess, working there. And I guess that's an interesting thing about this episode too. And something always fascinates me when people go off to these oil rigs in Antarctica or wherever and work for months and months and months. And that, you know, a very fascinating thing about this episode to me is to see them all come here and be in this situation. So, yeah. Oh, and I want to mention real quick, O'Donnell fanboying over the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they're far enough in the future where everybody knows who the Doctor is and UNIT, I guess.
Yeah. It's so the 22nd century. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
And they don't blink at the fact that the Doctor and Clara are there when they might know about them from 100 years before, because they understand he's got a time machine.
Okay, so I want to go back and see, now you're prompting me to watch it again, because my understanding of watching it was everybody but that one guy that was the greedy guy was UNIT, and he wasn't.
No, I never got that.
No, they're researchers.
And that's okay.
Yeah, the doctor, the psychic paper showed the Doctor as being a member of UNIT.
Cool.
Yeah, leading O'Donnell to say, "And you're the Doctor."
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, big fan. Good job.
All right. Well, Lee, I have a question for you. And perhaps you can help me solve this mystery. Okay. Under the Lake was the first episode since New Who, and our New Who episode, to not feature the sonic screwdriver. So there is another episode in New Who that did not feature the sonic screwdriver. Help me solve this mystery. What episode is it?
I thought the screwdriver had already been traded in for the sunglasses before now.
Well, maybe.
So, yeah, but if you're saying that...
Well, no, that was because it was in the second episode. This is the third episode. The last episode was when he lost it with Davros. So this is the next episode after.
Okay.
So predating that, what was the other episode? So help me solve this mystery.
Yeah.
It's a solvable mystery.
Mm-hmm.
What was the episode that did not have you could write it down, you know, tell a story about it and help me solve the mystery. But what was the other 10th Doctor episode that did not have the sonic screwdriver from series 4?
From series 4? Yeah. Yeah, you got me.
The Unicorn and the Wasp.
Solved
the mystery.
Yeah, solved the mystery. That was a good clue that I didn't get. Wow. Yeah. I was sure that there was the screwdriver used in that story, but
maybe not. Well, at least that's what Memory Alpha said. So blame it on me if it's not right. Or blame it on them.
I'll blame it on them yeah. How about
All right. So, Clarence, I actually have something for you.
Sure, what you got, man?
Did you pick up on anything or notice any visuals that may have sent you on a place where no doctor had gone before? I'll say it that way.
No. help me out.
I think he's talking about... I think you're talking about the mural.
Yes,
indeed.
With
the dragon on it. Yeah. I remember this is one of the few things I remember from watching this episode before that I laughed when I saw the mural on the big screen. Said, "What? that's got to be deliberate."
Yes.
Yeah. Look again at the uniforms of the people who are fighting the dragon on the big mural they have on the wall down there. They're Starfleet.
Red, yellow, and what was the other? Blue?
Good. Yeah. They're red, gold, and blue in there. Yeah. With black trousers and
Now here's something that I did not know. There is a door that Clara runs through when they are trying to lead the ghost away and, you know, trap the ghost. She runs through a door that has 1701B over it.
That's cool.
So that was really cool.
I wondered if I imagined that. because it goes by so fast.
Yeah.
But I saw that and I thought, wait a minute. And I didn't back up to look again. But yeah, I wondered if I imagined it. Yeah.
So that had to be deliberate, considering you had the people in the mural and you had, you know, this as well.
There's some shout out there. Well, and several people had observed that the alien spaceship looks like, a Federation shuttlecraft. It's
Or
Thunderbird 4.
And let me add real quick. This is the second episode I've seen in the last 7 days that featured people running through corridors. Mm-hmm. And I think they did it better in this one than they did in Picard. Because I feel like while they were running, they had a solid plan that made sense. The doctor was thinking 3 steps ahead. He was playing chess and it all worked out. It all worked out. So I like the way they lured the ghost in this episode, as opposed to another show I've watched recently.
Oh, but you're right, because they both had somebody by remote control closing the doors as soon as somebody got through.
Yeah.
Right? Because, in the Picard, they had the force field now.
So let me ask you this. So we get to the cliffhanger and we see, you know, this Dr. Ghost floating in the water, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's the cliffhanger. It goes off. As a cliffhanger goes, yes, it's classic Doctor Who. But I mean, I know when we were watching it then, we knew that there had to be an out. You're not killing the Doctor.
No.
So.
But we do really, really want to know what the heck happened.
Yes.
Is that
want to know, because we don't remember.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. Well, it's like, you know, any number of companions where we've, you know, I still remember as a teenager seeing Sarah Jane fall off the rocket gantry in Genesis of the Daleks. And I couldn't breathe until the next episode. They didn't kill her. Then I could drop her to her death on Skaro. But, you know, I just wanted to see how we're going to get out of it. So.
And speaking of Sarah Jane, one of the cards that we see when he's going through the cards, the doctor admits he's wrong and says something like, I knew you didn't live in wherever it was. Let's see. I should have known you didn't live in Aberdeen.
Oh. So he's got that one saved. For
yeah, he has that one
when
saved.
When he sees her again.
Well, that's sad.
All right, so let me ask you guys a question. Mm. This is part one of two, so there's not a lot of meat on the bone, so to speak. There are ghosts, so obviously there wouldn't be. Uh-huh. So my question to you guys is, before we get into our favorites, do you have any other topics that we have not discussed?
Well, we get in this episode that the TARDIS really does not want to be there. It is almost refusing to be in this location. It, even though it did bring them there. So I'm a little confused on that. Mm,
good point.
And also it can't translate this message or this writing on a wall, which we come to find out it's a signal. So I found that very interesting. And I want to know what the catch is with the TARDIS in this particular location. And also in this episode, I really love that it played with time in a way that I like Doctor Who to do. You know, he's going back to this site before it was flooded. And I find that whole concept really interesting. And I guess we're going to get that in the next episode.
Yep. Good point.
As we're moving toward the climax of this episode, he says he is going to do something that we've been told tacitly over and over again that he can't do. It's just like, damn it, this time I'm going to do it. And then he ends up dead. You're like, well, maybe that's why you don't just go back in time and make it not happen, you know?
And that makes me wonder, are these, and again, I don't remember, but it makes me wonder, are these people really dead?
Hmm. Interesting.
You know,
yeah.
Are they really ghosts? Because how does the doctor get out of this?
Right. Yeah, that's the big thing we want to see, right? Yeah. Well, we did see Pritchard's body and his ghost. Mm,
that's true.
Yeah.
So that actor, by the way, is somebody that I love in the detective drama Shetland. And
that's why I remember him.
Sandy. Yeah.
Yes. He looks so familiar. And I'm like, where have I seen you before?
Yeah. I had to look him up. Yeah.
Okay.
I know that face. Yeah. Because the characters are very different.
Yes.
So good for Sandy. But yeah.
Interesting. All right.
I know, so there's Lee, a big.
What about you?
Do there's
you
have a big anything? Crossover. Oh, yes. Yeah. There's a big crossover between Doctor Who fans and people interested in astronomy. And so I wonder how many people like me at one point of this said, what? Because my favorite constellation is Orion. And for a lot of reasons, I know more than I have any business knowing about Orion. And the stars that make the Sword of Orion are all part of a cluster. And one of them is the Orion Nebula, you know. But the Orion Nebula and one of those stars is 1,200 light years from the Earth. Okay? One of the other stars that we see as being brighter is bigger, for one thing, but it's 600 light years from the Earth. You see what I'm saying? Draw me a straight line through an object that is 1,200 light years away, 600 light years away, and another one that's 1,200 light years away. As a navigational device, as a map, I don't know where that leads you.
It points right to Earth, Lee.
Directly. No, it doesn't. It just doesn't. And you know, I had to go, I said, I don't think that's, so I had to go back and look them up, and yeah, that, no.
I have an answer for you.
Oh, good. It's four-dimensional space.
Yeah. See, it used to be exactly as you just described it, but that was before the last part of Flux.
Yes. Yeah. The geography of the universe must be very different now.
Yes. It's a little compacted now.
Yeah.
So, there you go. That's my answer.
But, you know, it's still a lovely image that, you know, they're lined up, because the stars in Orion's sword and indeed in his belt, they look like they're in a straight line. But, you know, that's only how they appear to us. That would be useless to somebody in space. But that's okay. That's okay. In our other favorite franchise, when two ships meet each other, they're always got the same orientation in space, right? There, you don't ever meet one that's upside down or anything. And yeah. So, you know, whatever. Yeah, just we'll buy it.
That would be funny if you had, you know, a space where one of them. Yeah, that would.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems like I've seen other franchises do it from time to time, but I don't think I've seen it in Star Trek. Not recently, anyway.
Yeah, right.
One thing that I did like from another franchise, totally off the topic here, but was in Battlestar Galactica, when they went into space, it was quiet. You know, it was, you know, always quiet when they were in space. I just thought that was always
great. Right. Yeah.
All right. So, gentlemen, have a question for you. Favorite scene? And Lee, I'll start with you. Favorite scene? What say you?
Oh, the fact that at some point the doctor and Clara have made him a cheat sheet and made him flashcards so that he can pretend to be a normal person, his social cues cards. That was my favorite scene. And there's a lot of little things like that to love in this episode, but I just thought that was brilliant. And that he dutifully reads the card off, even though it says, your friend, family member, / pet.
Yes. Yeah. Clarence, favorite scene?
Oh, man. I think I have to give it up to the cliffhanger. But I want to. I'm not going to take the easy one right there. I think O'Donnell fanboying at the doctor. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was fun.
All right.
You have to wonder why that doesn't happen more often, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
So my favorite scene, even though this isn't like blow you out of the water or anything, was literally the doctor floating in the water. I just like the visual of it. Mm. Something about Capaldi's face already having the angry eyebrows, then accentuated by not having eyes, just was a really cool visual. So for that alone, I think that was my favorite scene. Yeah. But favorite quote, Clarence, I want to start with you. Favorite quote, what say you?
This is easy for me. There's a scene where Clara, the doctor, I think O'Donnell, it may have been all of them in the room together. And usually the doctor is the one to say, run. Clara says, run. They all take off. So, she's trying to be the doctor here.
Yeah.
I like that. Let me say this, because that's nods that Chibnall is doing for what's to come at the end of this season. So, you know, I like how he's putting those little hints, you know, ever so strategically.
Or not Chris Chibnall, but
did I say Chibnall?
Moffat. Yeah.
Oh,
Steamo.
Oh, I'm sorry. Blaspheme. Moffat. By all
blaspheme.
Names. Blaspheme. I will not blaspheme, but I will say Lee Shackelford. Favorite. Did I say quote? Yes. Favorite.
Yeah. Quote. I love the doctor getting all excited about the prospect of learning about death. I just love where his mind goes. What's death like? Does it hurt? Do you still get hungry? Do you miss being alive? Why can you only handle metal objects? I didn't know I noticed that. Okay, so they try to kill you, blah, blah, blah. What does that matter? You come back a bit murdery, sure, but even so, calm, Dr. Calm. You were like this when you met Shirley Bassey. I love that.
Of course, I looked up Shirley Bassey. I'm like, who is this? Some singer, right?
Yeah, yeah. And and of a certain generation, yeah, she was it. So, yeah, I probably would have had the same reaction. Okay, calm.
So, Clarence, forgive me. Did I ask your favorite quote?
You did. It was run.
Run. Clara. Yes.
If only it had been when I say run, run.
Run, you clever boy.
Yeah.
And remember me. All right. So my favorite quote was, really? Come on. None of you? Surely just being around me makes you clever by osmosis.
I say that all the time.
I just love that. All right. Final rating. Lee, I'll start with you. Final rating. What give ye?
I really enjoyed this more than usually for a base under siege. And so I got to give it 4.5 fire axes, which are for some reason are in this all metal building with thick metal doors. Why? Yeah, don't think about why there's a fire. Anyway, 4.5 fire axes for me.
All right. Clarence, what say you?
I'm going to give it 3.8 alien shuttles out of 5.
There you go.
I'm going to give it... I'm going to give it a 3.8. I'm going to go with you, Clarence, because I'm going to give it a 3.8. I don't know why's out of 5. because I don't know why, but 3.8 sounds good to me. Yeah. I will say that I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And actually, this conversation has raised... I was originally planning to give it a 3, but I've actually, you know, increased... by talking to you guys, probably just simply because it wasn't a monumental quote unquote episode that I didn't think, oh yeah, wonderful. So,
yeah. And it is so funny because even at a 3.8, by the time we get to the cliffhanger, I almost just kept watching. I gotta watch now. Look what you did to me.
Right. Come on. Now you're supposed to wait a week.
Well, that's good in considering that some two-parters or so, this was nothing but a filler.
Mm-hmm. I didn't feel that way about this one. I feel like there were some substantial things, some great concepts, some things that had my head spinning with the whole ghost thing and his writing and this stasis pod that's sitting in the facility. And also they get cut off at the end. You know, one group is over here, one group is over here, and they're looking through a wall with water rising. So there were some great things in this episode.
Okay. Well, yeah. Good.
It's a Doctor Who episode by James Cameron.
Yes. It was. See, So you opened that door for me to do a pun, but I'm just not going to walk through it. Just not going to do it. You know, I could probably do it, but you know, knowing my puns, it would probably sink. So,
yeah. Wow. Too soon.
So with that said, for everyone listening or watching, if you're watching this, thank you for tuning in and watching us either on Facebook or however you're watching us now. But for everyone listening, as always, thank you for joining us. Let us know what you thought about this episode. And as always, we will be back next time.